you're getting a view into the locker room that you
Except
don't normally
you're getting
see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Joining us for interviews throughout the course of the show in an hour's time, Ben Kuzma from the Vancouver province will join us to talk about the Vancouver Canucks offseason. And then 90 minutes from now, we're going to be joined by new Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst, Brian Engblom, a name, of course, quite familiar to Winnipeg Jets fans as he's spent the last number of years here as an analyst. He's now heading down the road to the Sunshine State, but we'll be joined by Brian to talk about the Jets and the Lightning on the course of today's show. Follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve, Facebook.com/Legal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, both of you looking well on this sunny and hot Saturday, the 15th of August, 2015.
Yeah. Bokertov, Drew. By the way, it's good morning.
Yeah, I understood it. I just wasn't sure why you were speaking Hebrew there for a second.
I don't know. Just felt like it.
Okay.
You know, I could have said bon matin.
Sure.
Or I could have said bono early morning-o, or whatever it is in Spanish. First off, before we get into hockey, I got to say, great party last night.
Thank you.
Anytime someone offers me a unlimited supply of food, keg beer, cake, there was also ice cream with the cake, which
yes.
I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But Drew, there was something more important than all of those things.
It's true. There was something. Let me just interrupt. It was my wife's 30th birthday, so my parents were nice enough to host a party, and you guys were all invited.
And your 64th.
And my 64th birthday. Yeah. Yes, I'm robbing the cradle when it comes to marriage there. But yes, there was something even better than all the food and beverage. And why don't you, one of you?
Well, I mean, there was a magician.
That's true. There was a magician at a 30th birthday party. Anders the magician.
Well, you know what the funniest part was? So the party was at your parents' house.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, it was kind of a dual birthday, but more so for your wife, Laura.
Definitely more so right. for
and
Laura.
And we were there for Laura. We weren't really there for you.
Not in the least. But.
So your parents were excellent hosts, I must say. So I came a little bit late because you said to come for about 7. I was there around 8. And
they were perfectly appropriate timing.
Right. So I had to park a little bit further down from your house, and I see someone walking into the front of your house, but then he walked back, and then he went to the back, and he looked at me as I was walking up and said, are we supposed to go in the back? And I thought to myself, like, who is this guy? I didn't recognize him. I thought it might have been one of Laura's friends or something.
Sure.
And then he said, do you mind going first? Because I don't know really know anybody here. I thought to myself, like, is this guy going to rob them? And it turns out it was Anders the magician.
Yes. I must say he was a very good magician at that.
Very good magician, Drew.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, at the end of the night, he did not make you disappear.
Yeah, I know. I was still there, unfortunately. That's the greatest trick you guys would have hoped for is to have me disappear early on in the evening, and yet he wasn't able to pull that one off.
Anders did a great job, and what I liked the most about Anders was that he was very good with the crowd. He interacted with the crowd. He was very, very quick. And very handsome as well, I must say. But, you know, it's tough because there were a couple of tricks that he did that you were kind of wondering to yourself, how do you do that? Because he was doing it. You know, he did that trick.
He is a magician.
Yeah. Yeah. The key word is magician, you understand.
But you know what I mean? Sometimes you've seen these old tricks and
I don't know how they pull off any of the tricks that they do. Besides the concept, of course, that the hand is quicker than the eye. The root of it all. But the fact, I mean, the training that must go into getting all those tricks done is remarkable.
The Ron Burgundy cake was also very good, I must say.
And as his hand was quicker than his eyes during the Ron Burgundy cake.
Yes, he was just scooping his hand right into the cake. It was very rude. Let's get started talking about the Winnipeg Jets. Given middle of August, there's really not a ton of Jets news from the organization itself. Still nothing on the Andrew Ladd front. Still nothing on the Dustin Byfuglien front.
Still nothing on the need for free agent forwards
that's,
front.
That's right. They haven't filled any of the holes we've talked about for the last 3 or so weeks. And I've been telling you guys,
Chevy's been enjoying Folklorama.
I don't think that they're going to fill those holes, for the record, at this point.
Well, I mean, I You might be right, Drew. It's August 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Those training camps kick off. A month?
Well, the rookie tournament or the prospects tournament the 8th.
You see, yeah.
Yeah, in Penticton.
So you're talking what?
3 weeks.
You're talking, yeah, just over 3 weeks. Doesn't mean you can't bring somebody in. The free agent forwards that are sitting there still are Jarrett Stoll.
No, he's off.
No, I know.
Okay.
I was going to say, Drew. Jarrett Stoll, we mentioned last week, probably not an option just because of the past stuff that happened this summer. He signs, and that was an option. He signed for $800,000. Would he add speed to the lineup in Winnipeg? No. Would he help face-off-wise, veteran influence in the room, good shot, a really good one-timer, smart player? I mean, for $800,000, it's probably a pretty good deal. So there's some value off the market right there. Now, I'm not saying he would come to Winnipeg, although he's from Saskatchewan and played in Alberta, was with the Flames organization, then the Oilers organization, so he's not foreign to the area, if anything. Having said that, they don't sign him. Fine. But at some point, these guys are all going to sign or go on PTOs.
Sergei Gonchar getting a PTO with the Penguins. He's 41 years old.
Yeah, but the point is, if they're all going to be gone, then what are you doing? Because you can't, in my mind, go into the season with this roster, never mind not having dealt with Ladd and Byfuglien. I mean, if you end up starting the season by not adding any more players and not signing Ladd and Byfuglien, like that is, to me, a horrendous offseason. Like that is an awful offseason. You're putting yourself in a very difficult position because Ladd and Byfuglien, they say, we want to play out the year.
Mm-hmm. And what happens if you're in a playoff spot like you were last year with Michael Frolik?
That's where the trouble is. If you're not making the playoffs, you're going to be able to trade him, likely, although Byfuglien can block certain teams to be traded to, all that stuff. But you have to deal with these things. So I realize there's a vacation time here, but that last week of August into September, first week of September, and lots of times through camp, Drew, teams don't want to make deals because they want to see what they got. The Jets really know what they got because they haven't brought anybody new. Maybe Bermistrov's the only guy they really need to see. They're youngsters they've been monitoring. I'm saying anybody from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they got. They don't have a whole new mix. So, I mean, something needs to happen at some point if you're a Jets fan. And if nothing happens, what to expect?
And what was this entire offseason about if nothing happened?
I think a month is a long time for them to possibly sign more free agents. And I'm not saying that they're going to sign one of the free agents that we expect them to sign. We've gone over that list, and Matt Cullen was one of those guys. Richie
right.
mentioned
That's
Jarrett
right.
Stoll, even though I didn't think he was a possibility just because of what's happened, unfortunately, you know, off the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't think that was a good fit. But so if it's a Curtis Glencross, if it's a Brad Boys, if it's a James Shepard, who the Rangers signed Stoll, and Shepard was their fourth-line center last year, Richie. And I actually thought Shepard has come into his own after kind of always failing to live up to expectations. The point being, Rich, that they have a lot of promising rookies, and I know you want to get into that, Drew, here with, you know, Corey Pronman's rankings and the in-goal rankings of Hellebuck and Comrie and all that. The Jets have the cupboard stocked full of prospects, but to expect all of these prospects mm-hmm. to all come into the NHL this year and all work out and all play 82 games and all fill the roles that you want them to fill, mm-hmm. that's asking a lot. And I expect Nikolaj Ehlers, for example, to be in the NHL for the entire year. At the very least, 9 games. But I think he'll, because of his skill set, he'll end up playing for the whole season. But Andrew Kopp, Joel Armia, Nick Patan, I mean, these are question marks. You have to see how these guys are going to play in training camp and the first few games of the season, Rich, before you can just pencil these guys into the lineup.
I agree Ehlers will likely be in the roster for the entirety of the season, or at least not be sent down immediately, and probably accrue more than 10 games to take away.
He'll burn a year in his entry level.
Burn a year of his entry level. Now, if he doesn't do that, if he comes to camp, in theory, if he comes to camp, really struggles, NHL game, size of players, all of that, doesn't do well, then what?
Let me interrupt you for 1 second. What happens if he gets injured in camp? We saw it last year in Calgary with Sam Bennett.
Yeah.
I mean, Sam Bennett got injured in training camp. He had a bad shoulder to begin with. They decided to sort of clean up the shoulder. He came back at the end of the year. But even if Nikolaj Ehlers is dominant and looks like he's NHL ready, one injury, and there's nobody to fill these holes. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, it's a good point, Drew. I mean, this is the thing. So you need to do something about it. Now, we spoke about it last week. We spoke about it in many weeks now, that if possibly if you make a trade as one of these pending UFAs, you could fill a number of holes. But is that creating a hole and filling another one? And what are you doing? You know, I don't know. It's been a pretty quiet and odd off season in Winnipeg. And I'm kind of wondering where it's all going.
I think it's a valid point. You know, we talk about the need to sign another free agent. And, you know, you look at what Nashville did last year. Nashville took a couple guys off the, you know,
scrap heap.
Off the scrap heap in Mike Ribeiro.
Yeah.
You know, he was absolutely had no value. Things had been bad in Arizona, and he got bought out of in Arizona. I mean, he's got a bad reputation. Whether or not that's been changed around the league, I can't say one way or the other. But they took him off the scrap heap, and they got a tremendously valuable year out of him for what? $1 million?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's say the Predators weren't as good as they were last year. Let's say they're not a playoff team. Yet Mike Ribeiro still has a, you know, is putting up points throughout the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you've signed up to $1 million. Well, come the trade deadline.
He's got value.
He's got value. And you can flip that value. I mean, the Leafs did it with Mike Santorelli. The mm-hmm. Leafs signed Mike Santorelli in the offseason. The Leafs were, I mean, abysmal last year. We know that. But they flipped him along with Franzen, and they got value out of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
So for $700,000 or $800,000 in the case of Jarrett Stoll.
Even if you have to pay him $1.2 million because you're in Winnipeg.
Sure.
Just money.
Right. It's just money. It's not, and it's not, you know, and in the grand scheme of NHL contracts, the difference between $400,000 and $500,000 is nothing. And so, you know, maybe these guys come in and they're lightning in the bottle and they use you.
And you use them.
And you use them.
Yeah. Well, in Chevy's defense, I mean, last year, Matthew Perreault was a great signing.
Mm-hmm.
Three years, $3 million, and the Jets made the playoffs eventually. So you could say that the moves that he made, and let's not forget that big little trade of Vander Kane to Buffalo for Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford and some prospects. That helped a little bit. But I agree with Richie. I mean, and that's why I put up the piece that followed up Richie's Andrew Ladd contract piece about some of the players that the Jets could possibly sign, because I look at that third and fourth line and I see some holes. That's because they're not bringing Jim Slater back, it looks like. I'd be pretty surprised at this point if they're not bringing Jim Slater back. And you can say whatever you want about Jim Slater. His offensive totals have decreased, Rich. But he's a veteran guy who's extremely good on faceoffs, and he provides that veteran presence. He's reliable. Not to say that Andrew Kopp can't fill that role, but Andrew Kopp's never played more than one game in the NHL, and that was at the end of the season. And he looks good in what we've seen from him at the University of Michigan. But to step in from college to the NHL, it's not a seamless transition. And sure, we've seen players do it before, Richie, but that's why you see players go in the AHL for a couple of years before they get called up to the NHL. So that's all we're saying. We're a little bit cause for concern. We're not saying that the Winnipeg Jets aren't going to be a playoff team or don't have a chance to be a playoff team. But when you look at what the other teams of the division have done, and then you see what the Jets have done, losing Frolik, adding Burmistrov. Sure, you know, you've added some depth players. A guy like Matt Fraser, he's a fourth-line guy that will most likely be an AHL guy. So, I mean, we're talking more about filling that third-line wing role.
If Matt Fraser's playing significant minutes for this team, they're not a playoff team.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you're expecting a lot out of a guy who hasn't been able, to fill that role with other teams, Boston, Edmonton. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, you would have expected the Jets to sign someone else aside from Burmistrov and some of the other depth players, Party and Postma mm-hmm. and, you know, all these guys, Cormier. You know, we mentioned some of these other guys that have been signed, Matt Fraser. So there's still a month to go here before training camp. And you're right, Drew. There hasn't been a lot of news. Everybody was expecting the big Andrew Ladd contract extension to come.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's obviously some complications there because we thought that might have happened in early July. So we continue to wait. And heading into the prospects camp, there are some question marks because, sure, on paper, the Jets might have the top prospects in the NHL or top five prospects, whatever you want to say.
Well, let me just interrupt you, and then you can continue point. There were two rankings that came out this week, and now rankings obviously have to be taken with a grain of salt, but it's better to be the top than it is to be the bottom. And In Goal magazine, which is dedicated to goaltenders, ranked their top 50 goaltender prospects, and they ranked Connor Hellebuck as number one and Eric Comrie as number four. Now, their rankings are based on, they say, any goaltender who's played, I believe, more than 10 NHL games is not on their list. So, you know, somebody like Andrei Vasilevsky in Tampa is not included on their list because they're already proven in the NHL. John Gibson, et cetera, Peter Mrazek in Detroit. So Connor Hellebuck is the number one goaltending prospect, you know, that's not yet in the NHL, according mm-hmm. to them. And Eric Comrie is number four. And then in terms of skaters, as in not goaltenders, Corey Pronman of ESPN.com came out with his rankings, and he ranks the Jets as the sixth organization in terms of prospect depth in the entire NHL. He has five Jets prospects in the top 100 of all prospects. Nikolaj Ehlers, who's a top nine prospect in the of all the prospects available. Nick Petan, Kyle Connor, Joshua Morrissey, all of them in the top 35, and then Jack Roslovich just cracks, I believe, in the 90s there in Corey Pronman's list. So now go ahead, Ezzy, with that in context about the prospects.
Well, the thing is, Rich, the prospects in the Jets system right now are an A level. I mean, the Jets scouting staff, we've talked about this. We've been at all the drafts since the Jets have come back, except the Pittsburgh one, actually. But so we know a lot about these prospects and how the hockey world thinks of these prospects. Craig Button, I mean, the list goes on and on. The Jets have been praised for how they've drafted. I mean, now, having said that, some of these prospects are 4 years away. Some of them are 3 years away. Some of them are probably a year or two away, Rich. Some of them might not ever play in the NHL. I mean, I think we know that Connor Hellebuck, Josh Morrissey, Nikolaj Ehlers, these guys, we know these guys are going to play in the NHL. But the point is, of all these prospects, only one of them most likely is going to play in the NHL next year. That's Nikolaj Ehlers. And as far as the other prospects go, they need some seasoning, either in junior. Well, not Josh Morrissey's case. That's AHL. But Hellebuck, you're talking, he'll play one more year in the AHL. Sure, if there's an injury, he might be called up. But this is all about the future. And when you talk about the Jets right now, they've got a lot of young players in the lineup already. Scheifele, Lowry, and Trouba are still young, Richie.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you throw in an Ehlers and you throw in maybe an Armia or a Kopp, you still got to have a veteran in there. And that's why you saw the Rangers go out and get Jarrett Stoll. That's why you saw Pittsburgh go out and get Matt Cullen. So, yeah, sure, 2 or 3 years from now, we're going to see a lot more of these guys in the NHL. But for now, they got to get some seasoning in junior and in the AHL before we get too crazy excited.
About the prospect rankings, you have to understand, Drew, that, I mean, I'm not saying the Jets don't have good prospects. By all accounts, they do, by guys like Craig Button, who I really respect. And it's not to say anything against a guy like Corey Pronman, but I would be very surprised if Corey Pronman has seen all of these players play that are on these lists. It's just not feasible, budget-wise, for somebody like him to be seeing all these guys. So, and even if you are, you're seeing them very, you know, briefly. A game or two. So I think people need to calm down on prospect ranking lists.
Mm-hmm.
It's the new thing in baseball. It's a lot easier to do because you sit in your room and you look at all the stats and you see how they correlate to other players and you project how they're going to perform. And that's still a flawed system, but probably less flawed than what you're talking about with hockey. When in hockey, you can't do that. And I just don't know how you can read into that much in terms of these prospect rankings, because these guys just aren't able to see all these players play. Like, are you able to see these 100 players in Europe, in the CHL, so the Q, the WHL, and the OHL, the USHL, and the NCAAs? NHL teams have 7-8 guys to cover those regions, 9-10 even, and one guy's going to cover all of them and comment on all of them? So I, with due respect, takes a lot of time and effort what he's doing. I'm not saying it's not a good job, but you have to take a step. You have to take it with a grain of salt.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Central Division and the offseason for many of the Jets' main rivals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290 alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Liddell. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. I must say, gentlemen, we were out earlier in the week with Aaron Bernstein from Bernstein's Deli, and I'm already excited about Burger Week. It's coming up in about 2 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time, beginning of September,
mm-hmm.
And he was giving us a little bit of a preview about what's in store at Bernstein's Deli for the Burger Week. I'm excited already.
Yeah, it's a new burger.
Of course it's going to be a new burger.
Yeah.
You got to
be
original.
Last year's burger finished second, so...
It was Unbelievable.
Yeah. I like how they've decided to go with a new burger, not to be confused with the
restaurant.
Restaurant known as New Burger, who won. But, yeah, it's going to be exciting. Aaron showed us the burger, and it's going to be awesome. I think there should be Burger Month.
Well, actually, what happened was he showed you a picture of the prototype, and then you ate his iPhone.
That's true.
It was sort of sort of awkward the way that
I thought
worked
it was a 3D
there.
Printer.
Yeah,
and started eating.
You know, you ate his iPhone, and now you own an iPhone.
I had some good potato salad there this week. Baked potato salad is what I had, I believe.
So slightly different than a regular.
Yeah, it was really good.
Okay. Yeah. Central Division.
Just as long as you weren't baked when you were eating it.
Central Division. The offseason, you know, here we are about, like we said, about 3 weeks ahead of time. You know, looking at the Central Division, probably the most competitive division in hockey, yeah. I think it's fairly easy to say that. You know, does any teams jump out at you as having made, you know, either leaps and bounds forward or taken a couple of steps back as you head into the 2015-16 NHL season?
Well, Drew, I do guess that there's a possibility that Chicago may take a fairly significant leap back, pending what happens here in terms of the Patrick Kane situation. So, I mean, that combined with Patrick Sharp wasn't as effective last year as people may think. Kind of really struggled. You lose Johnny Oduya, as you bring in Trevor Daly. It's possible. And, I mean, their regular season last year, they looked like they had some holes, and they certainly turned it up in the playoffs. So, I mean, Chicago could be that, but they're such a high standard that going down really doesn't take them, you know, really out of the playoffs as far as you could tell, right?
Right.
So that would be one team that you think, okay, they've probably taken a bit of a step back. I think that's fair to say. Saad also is Anisimov for Saad. I know they play different positions, but that's a pretty big drop off in my opinion. So I think Chicago is taking a fairly significant step back. But again, I'm not sure that takes them too far down in the standings.
Don't agree with you at all. I think that, okay, let's put Patrick Kane aside. Let's assume that Patrick Kane isn't guilty of anything.
Well, I mean, I don't know what happened. Nobody knows, but I'm saying it's possible he doesn't play for a period of time, and then they had like a terrible, and then then they're really going to be not very good on paper as compared to last year's
team. With
that
aside, like, we're talking about the Brandon Saad trade. We're talking about Johnny Oduya leaving in free agency. That, I think that they've taken a small step back, but you mentioned significant. I don't think it is, and I think Artem Anisimov is a very good player. And you mentioned, Rich, he's a center versus a winger. Hey, I said on the show I thought that Brandon Saad should be signed to really whatever his fair market value is, Rich. What did he get? $5 million, $6 million, whatever he got. Mm-hmm. Excellent player. Huge reason why they won the Stanley Cup. So you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, and Brad Richards is another guy they lost. But, you know, they brought in Tikhonov, Panarin. These guys will fill voids offensively. Along with Anisimov, this defense is still one of the best defenses in the NHL. So you've got Trevor Daly there. He subs in for Johnny Oduya. We know that they play four defensemen if they need to, right? And then Trevor Van Riemsdyk, he'll be healthy. So I don't think the defense has really been affected at all. The goaltending obviously has not been affected. And you've still got your best players up front, minus Brandon Saad. You've still got Taves. You've still got Hossa. You've still got Kane. Right, Teravainen is going to have an increased role. Sure, he might struggle a little bit in his second year. I don't think this team has taken a significant step back. I think they've taken I think they've taken a step back, but I don't think it's significant.
I think a lot of it depends on Artem Anisimov, and I think he's a player who sort of looks better on paper than he actually performs on the ice. You know, he's got all the tools. I mean, he's got the height, he's got the size, he's got everything that should, you know, project him to be more than he is. But I mean, you know, this is a guy who's really a 40-point guy.
I mean, Brandon Saad's not a 90-point guy.
I know Brandon Saad's not a 90-point guy, but I mean, you know,
they're
what Brandon
different players.
You know,
I mean,
Brandon
one is
Saad's
a speed, skill, a real speed skill guy. Another one's a bigger guy who's got, you know, pretty solid hands, not bad hands. Maybe isn't the toughest to play against, but is very big. And somebody's not tough to play against. I don't want to say that. But maybe sometimes you're asking for a little bit more because you see a lot of talent there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's more than sufficient second-line center for a team that really doesn't have second-line centers and hasn't for some time. So, but I still think he does. His offensive ability is not the same as Brandon Saad. And he's not going to create off the rush like a guy like Brandon Saad is. And that's the way Chicago plays.
That's what I was sort of getting
right.
at.
Is no, that, there's no. You can't compare the two. You have to look at it as a whole. And clearly, Drew, they didn't want to trade Brandon Saad. I don't believe they did. I think Stan Bowman wanted to sign him, and I think what happened is it was a matter of just
sure.
a salary cap crunch. And you know,
I thought it was a stupid trade. I just thought the money that they paid Anisimov, they could have found a different way, another way to find that money. I thought personally,
when the trade happened, we talked about it on the show, and the difference between and they're going to pay not this year, so starting next year, they're going to pay Anisimov 4.55 per year. When Columbus is only going to pay Saad, I think $6 million a year. So it seems like
they didn't have enough money.
It seems like for $1.5 million. You figure it out. Now, granted, it's a little more than $1.5 million this year. It's closer to $2.8 million this year. Mm-hmm. I think there's ways to figure it out.
Well, I'll tell you how they were going to do that. They were trying to trade Brian Bickle. That's mm-hmm. what they were trying to do.
Yeah,
and they couldn't find someone to take Brian Bickle. So you're right, Drew. Yeah. You're right. I'm not going to argue on that one. I mean, Brandon Saad is young. He's, what, 23 right now? He's extremely quick. He's a great offensive player. I mean, this guy's a goal scorer. He can set plays up, too. And he's got a kind of gritty element, too. He's not a power – you wouldn't call him a power forward, but he's a guy that will go in the corner. He's a great player. I really like him. But when you look at the salary cap crunch that they're in, because Taves and Kane alone are going to be making, what, $9 to $10 million next year. And then it's 10.5.
Yeah.
So that you throw in all these contracts. Hossa makes a lot of money. Keith Seabrook makes a lot of money. They just didn't have the money. Crawford makes a lot of money. So you just didn't have any room. But I agree, Drew. I mean, you should have been able to move a couple players. I think Versteeg was another guy they probably would have moved if someone would have taken him. But he wasn't even playing in the finals.
But they didn't use their buyouts or anything? They didn't use a buyout? And I know
it's tough on that one. I do agree with you. I think what
Bickle
they
makes $4.5 million
needed
a year.
To do is move yeah. Bickle and trade a draft pick with him. I don't know. I'm assuming they considered that. I don't know
sure.
if that was something that they just said no to or another team wanted a high pick. On Anisimov, I shouldn't say... not difficult to play against because he can be pretty physical and he's pretty good along the boards, I think, and with his body and good stick handler, actually pretty good stick handler, but it's kind of the speed that he needs to play with,
yep.
and the playmaking ability is kind of limited for a center.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to give you your 15 to 20 goals probably, and he'll give you an honest effort, but I think he leaves you wanting a little bit more in terms of what you see. You see a big... talented player, and you think,
yeah.
oh, man, this
Anisimov
guy
is,
a, yeah.
is he's not an all-star.
Well, no.
I mean, Artem Anisimov, and he really came into his own, actually, before he was traded to Columbus, I thought, with the Rangers. That's what I thought his best year was, I guess that was 4 years ago now.
2010, 2011, he had
yeah.
44 points
yeah.
with the Rangers, and then the next year, 2011, 2012, he had 36 points
right.
in 79 games. I mean, he's topped out at 44
yeah,
points.
You're right, though, Drew. I mean, he's a 40, 45-point guy, whatever you want to say. You know, you're... I kind of know where you guys are going with this. You kind of expect him to be a Voracek or something with that size and the skill set that he has.
As well.
No, yeah. but he's not Voracek. And the thing is, I think on Chicago, with the talent that they have, a guy like Anisimov, there might be issues with fitting in, but they've obviously brought in some Russian players that they hope that they can play him with. So Viktor Tikhonov and Panarin. And these guys, you know, they're KHL guys. But I think they're trying to go in a bit of a different route. And sure, Rich, I think, you know, you've now lost some key pieces. Brandon Saad, Patrick Sharp, and Johnny Oduya are three, I would say, all-star players.
And Brad Richards.
And Brad Richards, who was a nice acquisition. And now you're replacing them with a lot of different pieces. I think it's going to affect them, but do I think they can still get back to the Stanley Cup Finals? I think they can.
Hossa's 36, too. I mean... again, these are just factors. Ezzy, I'm not saying they're not a good team. Again, I even think a significant step back for this team is still the playoffs. Even though last
right.
year's regular season was
yeah.
questionable.
No, you're right, Richie. If the Blackhawks don't win the Stanley Cup, I would say that's a step back. I mean, this is a team that expects to win the Stanley Cup, or at the very least get there.
I think one thing about this team is that they will take the regular season more seriously this year than last year. And I thought at times last year their foot was off the gas. And clearly they proved that they can do that. But I think this team is not as talented and as deep. And I think you'll see a little bit more of a concerted effort to stay engaged during the regular season because they know they're not as good and they can't rest on their laurels.
I also think they're going to look at the Los Angeles Kings, a team that everyone expected
well.
Last
yeah.
year to just at some point in time, you know, in March, step on the gas
yeah.
and make the playoffs. And lo and behold, they didn't or they couldn't. So, you know, they can coast. You know, they'll look at Los Angeles and say, look, you know, these are the perils of coasting and thinking you can turn it on. Sometimes you just can't.
No, you can't coast in the NHL. you can't do it. Even with the LA Kings, with all the talent they have, Rich, with Kopitar, mm-hmm. Drew Doughty, who we both agree is the best defenseman in the NHL, Carter, I mean, Toffoli, you can't coast. The NHL is too close. It's too tight. You know, just quickly, Drew, you know, speaking of the Central Division, mm-hmm. I think, to me, it's pretty clear that the team that has improved the most is Dallas.
Yeah.
I know that's the obvious answer, but I think when you look at that team and it's a young team and they address what they needed to address on defense, Oduya, I think it even though it might not be a significant upgrade over Trevor Daly, because Trevor Daly is a very underrated defenseman, but you go out and you get Patrick Sharp, who improves an already good top six.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are the best team, pardon me, the team that's improved the most.
Anthony Amiezi.
Yeah, that's right. And you get a goalie who can push Kari Lehtinen as a backup. But to me, the most disappointing team is the St. Louis Blues. I look at the St. Louis Blues, and they get knocked out in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like the TJ Oshie trade. I think the TJ Oshie trade is better for Washington. Like Troy Brouwer. Troy Brouwer is a good hockey player. But to me, St. Louis is lacking in their top six. And the St. Louis Blues have always had that issue with big goal scorers. And I realize
what about
they got
the goaltending.
Well, and the goal or the goaltending, Rich. And, you know, Tarasenko gets the big contract. He deserves it. He's one of the most dynamic scorers in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at what Dallas has done and how good the Central is. Colorado's improved a little bit. I think the Ryan O'Reilly trade was a good one for them. Zadorov's a good defenseman. They got some prospects. I look at what the other teams have done, Colorado, Dallas, and I say to myself, St. Louis, they might end up being second or third in the division, but when it comes around to playoff time, what's changed since last year?
You're right, Ezzy. They leave the same core together, and they never address goaltending, except for that few-month period with Ryan Miller, and then they expect something different.
Definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the UFAs that are still on the market, and we'll ask where will they sign, when will they sign, or if they will sign at all. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. This segment will spend some time looking at some of the UFAs still in the NHL and ask if, where, when, if they will sign in the NHL, where it will be, and when will it occur. The first name on our list, a guy who's in his mid-30s. He was traded at last year's trade deadline to Detroit, Eric Cole.
Eric Cole's a tough one, guys. Because Eric Cole's a little older now, as you mentioned, and still a really good player. Everybody kind of remembers him coming into his own in 2006 with the Carolina Hurricanes, the year they won the Cup. It's a tough one for me, Drew, to pick a team because of the fact that if he's not signed right now, and you know, you could put him in the same category as a Jarrett Stoll or a Matt Cullen, I think. Matt Cullen especially, same age group. It's got to be a team similar to the Detroit Red Wings who need that veteran presence. And, you know, it's tough to say, you know, if it's a team like the Oilers who he played for before. But I'm not sure if a guy like Eric Cole will get signed, but he's had a great career if he doesn't get signed again.
Sounds to me like somebody who's having a few too many beers at the keg party and didn't prep for this segment.
I didn't prep for this segment because I thought it was just going to be going over players. I mean, you look at let's get to Christian Ehrhoff and Cody Franzen because I have some teams if you want to get to those guys.
Hang on, Richie, do you have anything to say about
Eric
Cole?
I think Eric Cole actually would be a possibly good fit in Montreal. Just because he adds a size element, he can skate. He's not as physical as he was before, but he can. If you look at their wings, they add Zach Cassian as he get bigger. Maybe Cole adds a little bit more size.
Yep.
He can keep up speed wise.
Montreal makes sense.
You don't need him on the power. I know the power play struggles, but he's not a power play guy. But he can come in and play a depth role. I think maybe something like a PTO for a team like that might make sense.
KSEU.
So people know PTO means professional tryout offer.
Yes. You wanted his one. Christian Ehrhoff.
Well, Christian Ehrhoff is a very frustrating player for me. And Pittsburgh decided not to bring him back. And that's because they're going in a different direction. They're a little bit younger. A guy like Derek Pouliot, they think very highly of. And I do as well. Remember when he was drafted, before he was drafted, Craig Button spoke very highly of him. And he's a guy that just got into the NHL last year. Used to play for Portland in the WHL. You've heard teams like Boston, Richie, mm-hmm. and these are teams that need that defenseman because of other defensemen they've lost. Two teams right now, and Aaron Portsline, a good friend of the show for the Columbus Dispatch, has talked about a lot with Ehrhoff, is Columbus. And I believe there is an offer for Ehrhoff, and I think he's looking for a little bit more money. And so I think when you're talking Ehrhoff and Franzen, and the two biggest free agent names left right now, I would say, maybe you could throw in Curtis Glencross in there. But Ehrhoff and Franzen, especially for defensemen, I think you're looking at a team like Columbus or Boston, teams that need a little bit more offense. Because Ehrhoff and Franzen are offensive-minded defensemen, Richie. And I think even though Ehrhoff struggled on Pittsburgh, and I don't think Ehrhoff was the right fit for Pittsburgh at all, I think Ehrhoff has got to be on a team similar to like a Tampa Bay or a Detroit, a team that is a fast team. He's got to fit in with a fast team. And, you know, Cody Franzen had some good seasons with Toronto, but he's asking for a lot of money. That's why I don't think Cody Franzen signed, because I don't know if he's a $5 million defenseman in the eyes of Don Sweeney and the Bruins.
Rich?
Well, I think Cody Franzen's agent has really done a terrible job the past 2 years managing his client salary-wise. Just he did opted not for arbitration last year, and this year clearly he's not finding takers. He's misread the market. So I'll go after the Cody Franzen one first. I think there's a great fit in L.A. And I know a lot of this is based upon whether Mike Richards' contract can officially be terminated to create cap space in that team that they didn't have before.
They filed a grievance this week.
Yeah, exactly. So if you look at the Kings and you have Drew Doughty playing his 30 and you have Matt Green on the bottom pairing, you don't want to be playing Jamie McBain if you don't have to. Due respect to a guy who can move the puck pretty well, not very good defensively. If you could add a guy on your second pairing where you lost Sekera and you don't have Voinov right now,
yep.
And you could add in Cody Franzen in the second pairing, he's not a great skater, but in that system of big guys who take up a lot of space and play physical, which Franzen does, I think he could be a really nice fit. He also has a booming shot, as he, and can move the puck well. So he can be a real nice fit in L.A., but they have to be able to make the money work, which is obviously a recurring theme around the league.
It's a good point by Rich. I think L.A. is absolutely in the market for a defenseman, and that would be a good fit. And you also have to consider that, surprisingly, Robin Regier retired. So, I mean, when you look at the team that won the Cup a couple years ago, Rich.
For sure.
Richards is certain, uncertain future. Jarrett Stoll is gone. Slava Voynov might not ever play in the NHL again. Sekera was picked up at the trade deadline mm-hmm. for a first rounder, we should add.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone.
Absolutely, is he?
Regier is retired.
Trade another first rounder for Lucic, so you're going for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Lucic is. I like that move. I could see why you're going after him. Power forward fits into that, you know, LA Kings type of rough and tumble hockey that they play with guys like Dustin Brown and, you know, other players. So they got to bring someone in on defense, because I don't know if they expected Robin Regier to retire, and I don't know if they thought they had a chance to bring back Sekera. But this LA Kings defense, they've got Drew Doughty, they've got Jake Muzzin, they've got some good pieces there, but they're a little top-heavy right now.
Yeah, you'd mentioned before, of course, Christian Ehrhoff. To me, it makes a lot of sense for Colorado to give him money, because what you're looking to do is move the puck up the ice to your really fast players. He can skate. He's terrible defensively. But you've added Boschman. If you add Ehrhoff there, you can insulate him a little bit on a bottom pairing. Right now, you don't want to put too much pressure on Zadorov. Zadorov, I always mispronounce that, Ezzy.
Yeah, one of the two.
And you have Tyson Barrie to move the puck. So if you add Barrie in there, Boschman moves the puck pretty nice, and you have Ehrhoff, I mean, you could become a fairly formidable offensive team. And maybe instead of improving defensively, you improve offensively to take pressure off your defense, because you'll be attacking more. I think Colorado makes sense for there.
And you're going to sign Ehrhoff to a 1 or 2 year deal. I don't think he can be asking for a 3 or 4 year deal.
Agree.
Franzen, I think, would probably be asking for a 3 or 4 year deal, which again probably is the fault of the agent. Maybe he should be looking for a shorter term deal.
How many more times is he going to misread the market, though?
No, Drew. The thing with a shorter term deal for some of these players is that it actually might be positive for them in that they can become free agents again. And possibly if they have good seasons, they can make more money.
There's no reason why a player and a team can't use one another for future results or, you know, current results for the team. And then the player gets better results in next year's free agent market or anything. Yeah. Brad Boyce, last year, 78 games played with the Florida Panthers, 14 goals, 24 assists, 38 points. You sort of know what you're getting with him.
I think Brad Boyce should have been signed already. And I know Travis Yost at TSN, who appears on the roundtable at H&L quite often, wrote a piece about how he didn't understand Brad Boyce has been signed yet. And if you look at his stats, I mean, the guy's still a 20-goal, 40-point guy in the NHL, and I think he'd be a good fit for the Jets. Brad Boyce isn't the player he was when he scored 40 goals for the Blues. That was 10 years ago now.
2007, 2000. Yeah,
8 years ago. Yeah. But he's still a good player. And, you know, ask those who watch Florida, and they'll say he was a good veteran presence, Richie, for some of those youngsters last year. So Brad Boyce, I'm not sure if he's asking for a little bit too much money. But again, another guy that if you need a veteran guy in your bottom six and you can get him for, let's say, $1 to $2 million, I think that's a good signing.
The problem with a guy like Brad Boyce, guys, is that he doesn't skate well and he's not big.
And he never has, Rich.
He never has, but the game has sped up and he hasn't.
Still put up, you know, 38 points last year. I mean, he still got 14 goals and 24 assists last year. I have trouble believing that there that 30 teams in the NHL, even though he doesn't skate that well and he's
not
big.
I'm not saying that he shouldn't be signed, and I don't disagree with Ezzy that he'd be an upgrade on, what happened, for example, Winnipeg on the wing. Sure, he'd be an upgrade. The guy can still score. He can shoot the puck. He's a pretty smart player. You know, the fans aren't going to love a guy like that in the sense that he's not always appearing to be working that hard. He's not going to be in on the forecheck really hard. But he's a pretty smart player, and he can release the puck. And that's an upgrade on for many teams on their bottom pairing. But you guys know how this works. A lot of teams want their internal options or their cheaper options and all that, and they look elsewhere. But I don't disagree that he's an upgrade. I mean, you're just not going to get – if you're trying to create a certain idea of a player – of a team, excuse me, in Winnipeg, like Paul Maurice appeared to last year, forechecking hard, skating hard, physical team, he's not going to fit that. And at some point, you're moving away from that.
And I don't think Yuri Talusti fit that either.
Exactly.
And they didn't bring Yuri Talusti back, and they need to fill that void,
right? But Myers for Bogosian, Stafford for Kane, all right? Bermistrov for Frolik. I mean, Bermistrov, he can mix it up a little bit, actually. People maybe overlook that. But some smaller guys, prospects coming in, are you losing that identity? And that might be a factor in not bringing in a guy like that. It's possible.
We'll get back to more of these free agents in the coming weeks as the season gets closer and closer. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the ramifications of Austin Matthews signing in Switzerland rather than playing in the Canadian Hockey League. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Gentlemen, what has been discussed for the last number of months became official, I believe a couple weeks ago, when Austin Matthews, projected to be, if not the number one overall pick next year, then one of the top few picks next year, has decided to play in Switzerland rather than play for Everett of the Canadian Hockey League, of the Western Hockey League. Do you agree with Matthews' decision? And what do you think the ramifications are of this decision, if any, in terms of the long term for the Canadian Hockey League?
Well, I think it's really interesting because, to my knowledge, I can't remember a top prospect like this, Richie, signing to go play in Switzerland or in Europe in general, not specifically Switzerland, but a top prospect deciding to play in Europe. That's from North America, I should say. So not if you're, you know, I'm not talking Alexander Ovechkin or European prospects. I'm talking if you're Canadian or American deciding to not play in the NCAA or the CHL. And his rights, we should mention, are held by the WHL's Everett Silvertips. But there was also the option that he could play in the NCAA.
Yes.
So this decision to me, you know, whether I believe it's right or wrong, it's ultimately up to him, his agent, Pat Brisson, and his family, right? So they're the ones that are making the decision. So my opinion doesn't really matter.
I wonder what Pat Brisson wants him to do. He has no interest in him making money early.
He probably wouldn't be his agent. Wouldn't he just be his advisor?
Right.
Quote, unquote?
As soon as he signed for money,
he became his agent.
It's not like he has some incentive in that idea.
No, of course not.
I think, first off, the money thing, I mean, I don't think that was the number one or only motivating factor. I think that might be part of it. First problem.
100%. That was probably the number one motivating factor.
No, I think that, well, he's going to make a lot of money in the NHL. Okay, money aside, because let's get away from that for a second. I think that this decision makes sense for several reasons. The team that he's going to in the Swiss League, in Zurich.
ZSC Lions,
coached by Mark Crawford, who has done a really good job there. I think this is his third year. In Switzerland, used to do some analysis for TSN in addition to obviously being the coach of the Stanley Cup winning Avalanche. He's going to play with NHL players, and I think that for him, playing in the U.S. National Development Program, you know, he played last year with actually Jack Roslovic and Matthew Tkachuk, son of Keith Tkachuk, who's also a top prospect for the 2016 draft. He's going to get a different type of development, Richie, and I appreciate that. I think that for a player like him, he's looking at this, and it's not uncommon, by the way, for players in Finland, Sweden, Russia, at 17 years old, to play in the top leagues. We've seen that time and time again, for 17-year-olds to play with players that are in their 20s and 30s. So, sure, he might be getting paid to play in Switzerland, but I think he's looking at this, and he's saying, I'm going to be able to play against better competition against men, as opposed to playing against players in the WHL. So, you know, I think the decision, I don't think it's really up to me to agree with it or disagree with it, but I don't think it's going to hurt his development. I think he's still going to be a top pick, and I think he's going to get a good experience there.
You look at the roster, Marc-Andre Bergeron played in the National Hockey League. You have Dan Fritchie, who played in the National Hockey League. Robert Nielsen played the National Hockey League. Ryan Shannon played the National Hockey League. I mean, not top-end guys by any means. You're playing against older guys in their 30s, and it's going to be you're playing against men. So is it going to help your development? Likely it will. But I personally think this is completely and you're going to get coached by an NHL coach? Great. A lot of coaches in the CHL and the NCAA end up going to the National Hockey League. I think this is about cash.
I think this is about cash too. But is that necessarily a bad thing?
I don't have any. First off, do I judge him? To Jazzy's point, I don't. It's his choice. I have absolutely no issue with this decision. No issue at all. We live in a world where you can make choices. You can go anywhere you want. You know, most often, and you can make a lot of money. You can go. I don't judge him for going to the NCAA. Judge him for going to play in the CHL or going to play overseas. He has a right to do that. And if he wants to do that, by all means. I think it's motivated by money, but you know, it's his choice if it's motivated by money. I don't see it becoming a trend. I mean, I see it probably happening more in the sense that maybe some players who are in need of or families are in need of money. Although the sport is really becoming elite in terms of how much it costs to even get to this point, so I don't know. You'll see that a lot. I think in hockey, a lot of the guys don't need the money, so you won't see it as maybe some other sports and maybe they're impoverished families that they come out of and they want to be able to make money immediately. I don't think that necessarily will happen with hockey, and I don't also think Canadians and Americans will venture overseas to play in a foreign environment. They're not used to that. If, for example, the league ever were to expand to Europe, theoretically, I think you'd see it more often then. But remember, I think this is cash. A, the taxes in Switzerland, what? Is there any? He's going to be paying net of tax way more probably than a... Probably going to be in line with close to what a minimum level NHL contract is.
I would think so. If he's making, and I'm speculating here, but let's say he's making...
Drew has a few Swiss bank accounts.
Let's say he's making $350,000.
A few Swiss cheese accounts.
Yeah, a lot of Swiss cheese. If he's making $350,000, I'm pretty sure in Switzerland that would be tax-free money, which, you know, when you consider that's tax-free, you're closer to a minimum NHL salary. So, I mean, I think it's a smart decision, and strictly for the money factor.
Apparently it's $500,000.
Okay.
There's a few things to consider here, Drew, by the way. Auston Matthews was born September 17th. He missed the 2015 draft by 2 days. Mm-hmm. If he would have gone in the 2015 draft, he wouldn't have gone one. He probably would have gone three after Jack Eichel. That's something to consider.
Amazing
he's a little
year.
Bit older.
Amazing year.
No, but I'm just saying, yeah. He's a little bit older, so he's not I mean, he's 18.
Right. He missed the cutoff by 2 days.
And the
right.
500,000 was in about earlier in the spring, but I'm assuming it's around that figure.
Sure.
Yeah.
The other thing to consider here, and Rich touched on it a little bit here, the decision to go over to Switzerland when you're in the U.S. or Canada as a 17 or 18-year-old is something that is not common because of the fact that you're going halfway across the world when most kids are, if you're already in Canadian hockey, you're still playing with your team, or if you're deciding to go the college route, whether you're Canadian or American,
mm-hmm.
talking about hockey here, you're probably going to the NCAA. So it's not something that most families and players consider. So I agree with Rich that I don't think this is going to mean that a lot of top prospects year after year are going to go to Switzerland. First off, I don't or Europe specifically, Switzerland.
It's more appealing, as no bus rides.
I think because he's Austin Matthews and he has all of this talent, I don't think you're going to see kind of mid-level prospects be given this type of offer.
No, I don't think mid-level prospects. I think it's going to be for the upper echelon. Yep. I'll be curious to see if other upper echelon, top five, top ten picks decide to make this decision as well.
I think you'll see a few. I don't think you'll see a lot.
I do think that within the next 5 years, you're going to see an overhaul of how Canadian junior hockey treats their players.
Well, I guess you're talking more about what Rick West has been working on with paying players.
Well, what he's been reporting on TSN.ca, covering the lawsuits and the what's happening in Washington State, where a law was passed exempting the three CHL teams or the three Western Hockey League teams from treating their players as if having to pay their players minimum wage.
Yeah. So Everett, Seattle,
Portland, and Tri-Cities.
Or Tri-City, yeah.
Yeah. They don't have to
Portland.
Pay.
I'm sorry.
They don't have to pay their players minimum wage. That law was just passed. I mean, I think that you're going to see some of these players begin to rise up a little bit and say, you know, we need a better arrangement if we're going to continue with the way the CHL works.
And then the CHL is going to argue that if that's the case, then we're going to go under. It's going to be an interesting battle.
Yeah.
So the owners are making a lot of money right now.
I also think that there's an issue with Canadian players going to play the American college route. And I think they're losing out, or whether that's USHL then college. Because the USHL, as we've talked about, that with Kerry Eads, who's the GM and head coach of the Fargo Forest. We talked about that at the draft with the USHL commissioner. That league is just getting better and better. And I think you're right, Drew. I mean, I think it's time to start giving these players some more incentives.
I agree with that. And in terms of educational incentives, I mean, right now I don't think they're...
They're too restrictive.
Yeah, they're too restrictive in terms of returning to school.
Yeah.
They're trying to push you to pursue the hockey dream, but then if you do it for too long, then you can't get the educational benefits.
It'll be something worth watching. Let's head to break. When we come back, Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Vancouver province. He covers the Vancouver Canucks, Ben Kuzma. Ben, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, guys. You know, on holidays, getting up, I would only get up for you guys.
And we appreciate it, Ben. You know, when I'm sending you the text message and I'm telling you, you know, we're on at 7 a.m., you know, Pacific time, if you don't mind, if you don't mind joining us at some point. I'm always doing it with a little bit of apprehension.
It's 5 o'clock in the morning in B.C.
Yeah. Like, we don't get up that early during the hockey season. So, you know, let's get up. Well, you know, there's a good side to it. Let's get up, let's talk hockey, and let's get on with the day.
Attaboy, Ben. I appreciate it, like I said. Obviously, what brought you on to talk about the Canucks offseason, and it's certainly been an active one in Vancouver. You know, if you had to sort of sum up the Canucks offseason thus far in one word, what word would you use?
Is meh a word?
Yeah, I think it is.
I think they did what they had to do. They had to do something down the middle. that's not to take anything away from Bo Horvat, who, you know, will eventually be at least your second line center on this team. But, you know, they had to go out and get somebody. Brandon Sutter, you know, somebody who was available. The Canucks had passing interest in him at the 2014 trade deadline when, you know, they were looking at offers for Kessler. And, you know, a lot of teams were kicking the tires on Kessler, including Pittsburgh. And at that time, Sutter's name had popped up. And, of course, you know, you're not going to replace Kessler with Sutter. And at that time, there was kind of a lukewarm feeling in this marketplace toward that maybe coming to fruition. Of course, fast forward to now, and I think it's more of a situation where getting a guy in there who's 26, you know, you're giving him the money and you're giving him the extension in the hopes that maybe your young guys come along and eventually, you know, you've got to start thinking in this marketplace post Henrik Sedin. I would think, guys, after this next season, and this isn't to take anything away from the Sedins, you know, who rebounded to be 70-point players, but after this season, I can see them being second-line players. So who's going to be your first line? Who's going to be your first-line center? I think what happened in the offseason was they had to address the middle, because if you look in this division and this conference, it's murderer's row down the middle. And I don't think it was fair to put Bo Horvat into that situation. Yeah, you keep him as your third-line center, and then eventually he would move up.
Ben, I agree with you. I can absolutely see the reason why the Vancouver Canucks traded for Brandon Sutter for the reasons that you just mentioned, getting bigger up the middle, getting a little bit tougher up the middle. I think it's interesting the point that you made about the Sedins, who have a couple of years left, 3 years left on their contract, if I'm not mistaken. And when you consider that that might be their last 3 years in the NHL, sure, there might be a couple of years after that. Maybe they decide to play in Sweden again. It's kind of unknown at this point. But does that concern you at all from what you just mentioned, that at this point in their careers, they might be better suited for second-line roles?
Yeah, doesn't concern me this season, but I think after this season, I just think, you know, eventually you're going to regress in your mid-30s. I mean, let's be honest with the amount of hockey they played. They're not going to do the Sweden thing. They do want to finish up their careers here. So I think that's where you can see the transition happening eventually. But the big question to me is, okay, that's fine, but, you know, you can start projecting right now. Well, who's your first-line center? I don't know. Who's your first-line left winger? I don't know. And who's your first-line right winger going to be? I don't know. I think what you're going to see here with the Canucks a year from now is going to be probably more of an indication of where they're going than where they're going right now. They have 9 guys on expiring contracts next June. And even the guys they re-signed, everybody seemed to be getting the one-year thing. They're not going to extend Radim Verbata. They're not going to extend Dan Hamhuis. So you're looking at, you know, a real rebuild slash retool, I think, a year from now. And what they're trying to do, again, is what every team's trying to do, is get back in the playoffs. I mean, that's the mandate from ownership. And you're a 101-point team. I mean, you can look at it in that regard, but I also look at it a team that's core, that's a year older, and I look around the division and how much better everybody got, and teams that you expect to rebound like L.A. and San Jose, and just making the playoffs would probably be an accomplishment in this marketplace.
Ben, you mentioned in your article in The Province that the team and Jim Benning was willing to give Sutter a no-trade clause while he wasn't willing to give that to Lucas Pisa and Derek Dorsett. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that became a negotiation point with Sutter. He's already been traded twice in his career, and I think the last thing he wanted to do was worry about, you know, he had a year left, was wondering what was going to occur at the trade deadline, and I think he was looking for some security in that respect. And I think Jim Benning was able to give him a no-trade clause for the first two and then a limited no-trade for the next three, so he would maintain some flexibility. I mean, you know, a limited no-trade is, you know, 15 teams. You know, where do you want to go? I don't think you want to be handcuffed to a guy. I mean, he will be 32 when his contract expires. I mean, a lot of guys play at that age and are effective, but I don't think you compare one player to the next. I think the one thing that concerns me, you know, Brandon Sutter does a lot of things well. He's 6'3", you know, he's around 190, kind of a slight centerman who's, you know, good in the faceoffs, good two-way player, but when you look in this division, I mean, their first road trip of note in this division, they go Anaheim, LA back-to-back, and you can just name the first two line centers on each team that he's going to go up against, and that's what it's like in this division. I think the only thing that concerned me about the contract was more term than the money. He got fair market value if you look at guys who are around his age who are scoring 20 goals in the NHL. I didn't quibble with that at all. My concern was the length of contract, but, you know, to Benning's credit, he was able to get at least the limited no trade in the last 3 years because he has to have some flexibility, and B, they might need him here that long because their center ice position is really up in the air.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver province discussing the Vancouver Canucks and their offseason.
Ben, you look at Nick Bonino, and he's a guy I've always thought was a great kind of Swiss Army knife seventh forward, a guy you can play on your third line, you know, complement the first two lines of injuries, play some power play and penalty kill if you need. What was your take on his tenure, obviously short tenure, in Vancouver?
Well, I think the worst thing that happened to Nick was he scored 7 goals in his first 14 games. And so we're all starting to project that, hey, this guy's going to be scoring 40 goals. I mean, and with that comes pressure. You know, he went 15 games without a goal after that. And you could just see it weigh on him. And he struggled. Like you mentioned, he was good away from the puck. I mean, he was on the primary guy on the PK that finished second in the league. Fairly decent guy in that respect, but I don't think he's a second line center in this league. I mean, when he came here, he had 22 goals with Anaheim, but you know, he was getting power play time with Getzlaff and Perry. I think I might have 20 goals. So the thing about Nick here is I think he really struggled. And to be honest, I think when you look back at the Kessler trade, and that was one of the pieces, you know, him and moving Clendenning, I think they kind of erased a couple of mistakes, to be honest. I think he's a third-line center, and I think if you look at what's happening in Pittsburgh, Nick Bonino will probably have a decent year. You're suddenly going into a third-role position. And, you know, if they got to Eric Fehr as well, who can play the wall, and maybe Dupuis on the other side, that's not a bad third line.
Agreed.
So suddenly Nick Bonino's going to go to Pittsburgh where he doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders, and he'll probably have a decent year. In Vancouver, pressed into that second role position, I mean, Willie Desjardins kept him and Chris Higgins together like peanut butter and jam, even when they weren't producing all year long, hoping that something would happen there. And it did down the stretch. I mean, they started to gain some chemistry with Verbata, and they were a decent line going down the stretch, but we know they didn't do anything in the postseason like the rest of the team. So I think that was something that was really bothering management here. They thought they saw how Calgary kind of beat them up in every conceivable category, and especially down the middle.
Ben, it wouldn't be a Vancouver Canucks interview if we didn't ask you about goaltending. I think that's in the contract. The Canucks, you know, obviously they had a glut of goaltenders, as it turned out, with Jakob Markstrom and Eddie Lack, and then Ryan Miller last year. Of course, Miller being injured for a significant portion. They solved that problem this offseason, trading Lack to Carolina. They signed Markstrom to a 2-year contract. Are you surprised that they chose to deal Lack and go with the Markstrom Miller combination, or how did you think that that was going to play out in the course of the offseason?
Well, it's funny, you know, guys. It's almost like a couple of years ago when they had Luongo and Schneider on the books for a 9.3 combined cap hit. At that draft in Jersey, you knew something was going to happen, and they couldn't move Luongo's contract at the time because ownership in Florida hadn't changed at that time. And Corey Schneider, who would have been the poster boy for everything that's right in Vancouver, was moved, and that really bothered the populace. I can't tell you of a player, there's more angst in a town over a player leaving than Eddie Lack. I think a lot of it has to do with his demeanor, his ability to handle the marketplace here, the fishbowl existence in that position in Vancouver, and the fact that he was coming along. I think what it boiled down to is it wasn't so much the fact that, you know, Eddie had a year left and then there was going to be the contract extension. And if you look at Miller's deal, the Canucks probably would have carried $10 million on the cap for 1 year. Until they moved Miller or his contract expired or whatever. And I remember talking to Jim Benning about it, and he said, well, he thought ownership was comfortable with it. Well, obviously ownership was not comfortable with it. And I think from a hockey operations perspective, if Eddie Lack is your guy, you're going to find a way to get that done. You know, he had a year left at 1.3, and then comes the extension. If he's your guy, if you totally believe in him, and he's not just this happy-go-lucky goalie you see as kind of a backup who may never really, you know, climb to the mantle here and be your guy, you get an extension done. But the flip side of that is Jacob Markstrom, who basically has a very short book of work at this level, 50 games, under a 900 save percentage. You know, it's a different game at this level. There are a lot of American Hockey League goalies of the year who haven't cut it in the show, and Markstrom's one of them. And I know Rolly Melanson, the goalie coach, has always been really high on him because he looks at a guy who's big that he thinks he can mold into a guy, and he's done great work with other goalies here. But that one kind of shocked everybody here just because of the way Eddie handled himself, and he was extremely popular. But the bottom line there is I think that if they believed in him, they would have got a deal done. I think what really bothers people here is the Canucks sat at the draft in Florida without a second and a third round pick, and they tried like crazy to move Bieksa. There was a San Jose deal that fell through on the Friday of the draft for a second round pick, and then not getting a second round pick for Eddie Lack, I thought was really horrible because teams did come calling Saturday morning. Edmonton called Saturday morning after they already had the deal done with Carolina for a third and a seventh. They're willing to give him a second. I think they were reluctant to trade Eddie Lack in the division and in the conference. So if you're that reluctant, then he must be a pretty good goalie.
Yeah.
So that's what bothers us here. I mean, if you're that reluctant to trade Eddie, I mean, Edmonton was going to give you that second round pick that you coveted. I can't tell you what, watching the table when I was at the draft, the Canuck table, that second round, I mean, they were ashen-faced because there were at least six or eight guys in that second round I know they were interested in, like really interested in, but they didn't have that second round pick. And, you know, you asked me at the outset what kind of offseason they've had, and the fact it wasn't very good, and it started at the draft. They didn't recoup the second round pick. They only got a third rounder and a seventh rounder for Eddie Lack, and their draft picks were, you know, not earth-shattering because they didn't have big picks in the draft that was arguably the best one since 03. So I don't think it's been a great offseason for the team.
Ben, I know this trade happened earlier in the offseason back in early July, but the trade to bring Brandon Prest to Vancouver from Montreal for Zach Cassian, Brandon Prest admitted at the time that he was shocked by that trade. What was your take on that trade from the Vancouver perspective?
Yeah, that's a good question. Twofold. I think one is if you look at Lyndon Vey, they've tried to do everything with him. You know, he came here a year ago, a guy who had played for Willie Desjardins and Medicine Hat, projected as a third-line center, almost locked into that position right from the first day of training camp in Whistler, and really struggled physically. Pretty good puck skills, smart, but got bumped off the puck. They tried him on the wing. So he projects as your fourth-line center this fall, and you're going to have Derek Dorsett on one side and Brandon Prest on the other to protect them. The problem with that is you're tying up $5.1 million in two fourth-line wingers, which is a lot of money in today's cap crunch world. The other part of that was moving Zach Cassian. They also had to give up a fifth-round pick, and I think that was, okay, we'll take him, but we want this. Cassian just never evolved here. He's another one of those big guys who can skate in the NHL who just doesn't get it together, whether it's on or off the ice, and I think they gave him enough rope in this marketplace to hang himself, and I think they just lost faith in him and lost trust in him. And they had tried to move him at the trade deadline, and there were no takers for him. So it wasn't shocking that he was moved because I know that was part of the mandate here was that, you know, we're trying to change the culture here as well. And Zach's been given every opportunity here and is going to get another one in Montreal. So Prest is another guy who, you know, he comes here just for a year, but I think it's more to give him that edge that they didn't have in the postseason. You know, they went into Calgary and were playing on their heels and got pushed around by a younger team, and I know that drove Benning crazy, and that's part of the reason Prest is here.
Final question for you, Ben, and you mentioned before, you know, Kevin Bieksa. How much of that trade was, obviously, you know, he's not playing at the same level he was when they went to the Cup a few years ago, and how much of that was changing just the culture in the locker room and moving on?
Well, Kevin's a great guy in the room. I mean, that was never a cultural thing. I mean, he was a real leader in the room. I just think Kevin has been playing through injuries the last couple of years, and he had a year left. They weren't going to extend his contract, so it was one of those situations. It was an inevitable thing. And I think it was one of those things where you better move him now because you might be able to get a second-round pick for him. And, of course, where they gave up a second-round pick in the Sutter deal, so it's a little bit moot. But it was never a problem, like, with Kevin off the ice. It's just that, you know, since 2012, this guy's been battling all kinds of injuries but plays through them. And, you know, when players get north of 30 guys, they're really reluctant to have any kind of surgery. They'd rather rehab, you know, whether it's a sports hernia or a groin injury or whatever, they would rather rehab it. I mean, Hammy's had a real serious hamstring injury last year. I should say groin injury. But, you know, you have the surgery, you're going to be laid up for half a year, then the scar tissue sets in, and you're never the same player. So Kevin fought through all that stuff. I mean, we hear people call people warriors all the time, but Kevin was. He did whatever he could. But his at the end of it all, to be honest, he was a third pairing guy, and you're not going to pay a guy NHL defenseman money to be a third guy, and you're a third pairing guy, I should say, who's making good coin. So they knew they had to move him. He goes to Anaheim, and he'll help them there, but they certainly had to go in another direction here.
Yeah, I didn't want to insinuate, Ben, that he wasn't good in the room. I just thought,
no, it's great.
You know, maybe. But I guess another last question, but maybe the fact that he's there and he's such a presence, it's hard for the next kind of age and group to create their own leadership core.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the one thing here, I mean, they don't have much to play with. I mean, they've only got about 1.27 left in the cap. I could see them adding a cheap, unrestricted free agent defenseman. You know, Schlemko played for Willie in Medicine Hat, too, and did a decent job when he went to Calgary, and he's right in that wheelhouse. I think the one thing the Canucks have to do is maybe add one more D-man before they go to camp, because you're going to lose guys through the year, especially in this division.
Ben Kuzma covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province. Ben, appreciate your time this morning. As always, just tremendous insight into the Canucks.
Okay, I'm going back to bed now.
Have a cup of coffee, Ben.
Have a good weekend.
Anytime.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Stafford now will leave it for Party. Got away from him. Kessler's got it. Sanderson scores! Silverberg tap in. Back door. And we're all tied up again.
That's Anaheim Ducks forward Jakob Silverberg scoring against the Winnipeg Jets in last year's playoffs. Silverberg signing a contract extension with the Ducks earlier last week. Just after we got off the air, I think last Saturday is when it happened. 4 years, $15 million. Welcome back to the program. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. In case you missed Gilbert Gottfried this weekend at Rumors, all tickets sold out, of course. Be sure to get your tickets early for Rob Schneider coming up at the end of September, as well as Eliza Schlesinger coming up at the end of October. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Ducks signed a couple of their RFA forwards this week. We mentioned Silverberg. He gets a four-year, $15 million contract. Average annual value of $3.75 million. And they also yesterday signed Carl Hagelin, who was also an RFA. They acquired him from the New York Rangers earlier in the offseason. Mm-hmm. They signed Hagelin to a four-year, $16 million contract. He's going to get $4 million per season. Your thoughts on both of these contracts for both Hagelin and Silverberg?
I think, well, first of all, I like the Kevin Bieksa signing for the Anaheim Ducks.
Trade
in addition to that, and then trade and then sign. But these specific signings, Drew, Carl Hagelin obviously traded for Emerson Edom at the draft. Emerson Edom also scored a nice goal against the Jets in the playoffs. That was game four, I believe. I can see what they're doing here, guys. Trading for Carl Hagelin, a speedy guy who was buried a little bit in the New York Rangers system as far as kind of not living up to expectations on the top lines, and then playing a lot on the third line. A good player, a player that's been healthy, a fast player, you know, a guy that maybe leaves a little bit to be desired with his offensive totals. You expect him maybe to be up around that 50-point range, and he's kind of hovered around the 35 to 40-point range, but a very smart and skilled player, very fast. And Jakob Silverberg, I mean, you mentioned it off the top, Drew. Silverberg was very good in the playoffs this year against the Jets, and continuing that against the Flames.
18 points in 16 games in the playoffs.
He was effective. And, you know, he kind of struggled a little bit when he first came over to Anaheim, a big part of the trade, the Bobby Ryan trade. And, you know, those contracts make sense. It doesn't feel like they paid too much or they gave too many years. Those are both players that are, you know, in their mid-20s. I guess Silverberg is, what, a year or two younger than Hagelin?
Silverberg is 24, and Hagelin 26, is 27. 26.
Yeah, so, I mean, generally, you know, the same age range.
Yeah, Hagelin will turn 27, actually, next week.
The Anaheim Ducks, though, I think are still in a very good position. And you, we talked about this off-air. They're still in a very good position to get back to the Western Conference Finals and even the Stanley Cup Finals. If they don't run into a very talented Chicago team, they go to the Stanley Cup Finals and possibly win. So I like these signings. I overall, Richie, like what the Ducks have done. They're young on defense. They're very talented on defense. Frederik Andersen had his best year in the NHL. Mm-hmm. You know, struggled a little bit against Chicago and struggled a little bit earlier in the season too, but played a lot, proved that he can be that number one guy. So I like where the Ducks are headed. Silverberg, Hagelin, these are guys that are complementing the big boys, Getzlaf, Perry, and Kessler. So I like it.
Yeah, I sort of interrupted. As you mentioned before, you were referring to the Bieksa signing after the trade, so I apologize about that. The Bieksa, I think Bieksa and Boschman, I think I like Boschman better than Bieksa at this point in their careers. So I guess if you look at the defense, which I really like their young defense. I like Vatanen, I like Lindholm, and I like Fowler. I think they're all very talented. Did they get better on defense? I think they got probably slightly worse. And that wasn't a bit of an issue for them in terms of having the big Keith Seabrook kind of combination there that they don't have. As you mentioned, the goaltending issues. I like Frederik Andersen, I mentioned, but as he was right, he absolutely struggled against Chicago, especially late in that series. You know, the goal line shot from Taves, they ended up winning that game, but that was a harbinger of things to come. The signings of Silverberg and Hagelin, I think, are very good signings. As you mentioned, a lot of the qualities of Carl Hagelin. I think one big thing in the Emerson Edom trade that you get with Carl Hagelin is Emerson Edom is a great skater, too. Hagelin is a terrific skater. But he's more willing to go into the dirty areas than Emerson Edom is. And, you know, he gets a 17, 15, 17 goals, stuff like that. I think that's pretty good. I mean, he's not going to be a playmaker. He's not the most skilled guy. He's not the most skilled guy in the league, but he's so fast, he gets into positions and gets himself opportunities. And he's exactly what a team like Anaheim needs when they have such top-end talent there. They don't need him to be, you know, in the Rangers, they have a bunch of good players, but they don't have Getzlaf or Perry. So he slots in, I think, a little more comfortably on the left side. Silverberg, what I loved about Silverberg last year, and he certainly surprised me, is that he was able to slow the game down. Good stick handler, pretty smart guy, sees the game really well and is able to play with skilled players really well. And those are all great qualities. And, you know, his development and his confidence, I thought, took significant steps last year. He's not going to be, you know, he's not your biggest guy. He's not tiny, but he's not your biggest guy. He's not going to be going around hitting everybody he sees, but they don't need him to do that. He can make the players around him better, and he gives that second line a different offensive element. You know, Kessler played really well, obviously, in the playoffs. But Silverberg was finding him, making him make plays, making him play a little more of an east-west game than necessarily a north-south game. I thought it complemented him well. It gave him different elements to their game and made them a little more dangerous. And the value that they got there, I think, is pretty good. I think both contracts, money-wise and term-wise, are very solid deals.
You mentioned, too, just quickly, Drew, I mean, even throwing in a Sean Horkoff there on the fourth line, like that movie's. He's obviously a little older now, and he's slowed down a little bit. But I like adding him, knowing that he's going to play that role, similar to a Brendan Morrow on Tampa Bay. And I realized that Brendan Morrow was limited, but John Cooper kept sending Brendan Morrow out there because he's smart, and you know he'll chip in the odd goal. He scored 11 goals last year, Horkoff, that is. But I like these moves make sense because I think, Richie,
yeah,
you know, I know... You know,
Chris Stewart, too, has he?
Yeah, Chris Stewart.
And Chris, throwing Chris Stewart. I think this Ducks team is the best team in the West. And I think that goes to what we were talking about earlier in the show about Chicago losing some of their key pieces, Saad, Sharp, Oduya.
You're right.
This Anaheim team is, and it's young still, and I think it's only going to get better. Even Getzlaff and Perry. I mean, these guys aren't, you know, they still got a lot of good hockey left in them.
I know we got to go to break, but I agree with Ezzy. I think they're the best team in the West.
Yeah,
and I think they've probably gotten better overall than they were last year, and you know that you have some concerns again on the back end and in goal. I mean, those leave you a little bit worried. Mm-hmm. Some of these teams push them in the playoffs. But I think right now they're the best team in the West.
I think what's also tremendously impressive is that Bob Murray has been able to put this roster together and still has $8.3 million in cap space. And they don't really have anybody, you know, overwhelmingly coming up that's going to eat up a lot of that cap space in the next couple of years.
That partly has to do with some of their young defensemen on entry-level deals.
Lindholm and Vatanen are going to take up a lot of that money.
Well, how much are they going to take up?
But they're still on entry-level deals.
No.
Four?
Lindholm signs for 6 years, so get big money.
Okay. But in any, my point is, the real core is, I mean...
Yeah, no, it's true. It's a very good point by you. I mean, you look at the roster, the big players in this team are locked up. Perry, and now, again, granted, we said it on the show. 4 years from now, they're going to have a lot of money in guys who are on the other side of where need to be.
Right.
But right now, I think they look like the best team on the West on paper.
Entering this season, they can certainly add one or two pieces, you know, at the trade deadline or as the season progresses and really load up for that Stanley Cup run.
When they should qualify is if Lindholm and Vatanen have good years, I expect that to be the case. And say John Gibson were to elevate and have a big year, that's a lot of money those three guys are going to get after next season.
Sure. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll be joined by new Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst Brian Engblom. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, as well as having the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the new color analyst for the Tampa Bay Lightning, Brian Engblom. Brian, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us. And I guess, first and foremost, congratulations.
Good morning, guys. Thanks very much. It's a tremendous opportunity for me. I'm thrilled to be going to Tampa. And the one thing about working for TSN was the closest thing I've been in many years to working for a team. You know, I was in and out a lot, but covering the Jets games was terrific, and it really whet my appetite again for that, to be connected to a team. I mean, since I was 5 years old, I played on teams, and the thing about doing national stuff all the time is that you miss that connection. You know, the winning and losing, it's fun, I'm really glad to be working for a team again, and Tampa, of course, is a terrific organization. They've done so many great things, especially over the last 3 or 4 years since Jeff Binnick took it over as owner. And, of course, the management under Steve Yzerman has done a fabulous job, and the results are pretty obvious on the ice.
Brian, how much of your decision to become the new color analyst was the amount of time that you saw Illegal Curve in Winnipeg?
You mean trying to get as far away from you guys as possible?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, it was a huge influence, absolutely.
Brian, obviously, we'll talk about the Lightning, but first we want to sort of talk about your old team, the Jets, and sort of the offseason that they're in the midst of and that they've had so far. You know, we were talking about this off the top of the show. We've been talking about this really for the last 2-3 weeks. How surprised are you that here we sit on August the 15th and nothing has been done, nothing has been completed in regards to either a trade or a contract extension with Andrew Ladd and or Dustin Byfuglien?
Well, those are going to be two, obviously, very critical deals to get done. Both of those guys are sitting in a pretty good driver's seat, so I'll bet you their agents are playing hardball, which is what, you know, you pay them to do. They're going to try and hit a home run and get as much as they think they deserve and as long a term contract as possible. So it's not easy. I mean, the Jets are very careful. They're very smart. They get a budget from the ownership, and they're expected to stay to it. Now it's gone up and up, and you can tell that the the ownership. I mean, they'll do anything they have to win, for sure. And they know that those two guys are critical to the success of the team. Having said that, at some point, you know, you wonder where, how much money can you spend on both those guys? And that's the tough part. So, you know, the Jets are negotiating really hard, too. They want to keep both of them. I have no doubt about that. But can you blow up the whole budget? I mean, look at the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, on the highest end scale with Kane and Toews, but really changed what they have to do with the rest of the team. So if you make that commitment to gigantic dollars for two people, then you're really going to have to make long-term adjustments for the next, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it's going to be, on everybody else on the team. And that can limit your success sometimes, because you just can't go after the pieces that you need sometimes. I think that's the obvious part of it. So these negotiations are really difficult on both sides. And, the players are really in the driver's seat because of their success to this point.
Brian, as you mentioned, you've watched the Jets play a lot over the years, and they had the breakthrough season making the playoffs. When you look at what the Jets have done this offseason, not bringing back players like Jim Slater, Lee Stempniak, Yuri Tulusti, bringing back Burmistrov, losing Michael Frolik to Calgary, does it concern you at all that the Jets haven't brought in veteran forwards in the bottom six when, as you mentioned, they're competing with teams like Chicago, and a team like Dallas has really improved their roster with Patrick Sharp and Johnny Oduya?
Yeah, I think it's sometimes, you know, it's easy to sit back and see what other teams are able to do and try to, you know, measure the Jets and say, well, you just haven't done enough. They had a pretty good, solid team, and I don't think they want to pull it apart too much. Again, the numbers are really important. I'm a big Frolik fan. He pushed the envelope, too, financially, because he could, because he had a really good, solid year, and he is a Stanley Cup winner. So he did what he had to do for himself and for his family. I get that. That's what makes today's NHL so difficult to manage, because I'm sure they wanted to keep Michael Frolik, but everybody gets slotted in, not only just in a position and what their job is going to be, but it's also the money that should match that position and that job. Maybe that's the best way I could describe it. So if a guy like Frolik in the Jets' mind, he does what he does. He can kill penalties. He's a terrific, reliable forward. You can move him up and down. But how valuable is, they put a number on him, and the number didn't match, plain and simple. And that's the way today's NHL is. It's a huge advantage for the players, because if they can find somebody else who's going to pay them a lot more, well, they get to be free agents. And that's, you know, that's the biggest difference in the league today. So for the Jets, who had a team that made the playoffs and really came together and did a fabulous job, they want to keep the core together as much as possible. But unfortunately, it's kind of like in football, you know, sometimes these guys are sort of like the linemen, you know, the third and fourth line guys, sometimes second line guys because of money numbers. They're like the linemen in football. And these guys are the ones that kind of get tossed out because the running backs and the quarterbacks and the receivers are making all the money. And then you find out your quarterback's getting hammered because the line's not good enough anymore, you know? So it's really hard to get the mixtures right when you try to sign and keep teams together.
And Brian, we'll have a final Jets question here before we move over to talk about the Lightning. And I think the fans will certainly miss, your, I always thought, astute observations during the television broadcast here for TSN. What would you say, Brian, if you look at the Jets now, it's going to be from afar, but what would you say maybe is the biggest need, what you think they need to do to take the next step roster-wise?
I think a lot of it depends on the developments of their two center icemen, Lowry and Shifley, how quickly they come along. I thought Lowry did a terrific job as the season went on. I mean, he's a really intelligent player. For a young kid just coming in with not a lot of experience, I mean, you could tell he's the type that observing all the time, learning every shift. That's really important because he's got the size. And if his skill level, once he's comfortable and he starts to feel it a little bit more offensively, he's going to be a really valuable guy. Shifley came along maybe more slowly than some people wanted him to or expected him to, but the young man's got terrific skills. There is no doubt about that. Is he going to take another step forward this year? They need him to be a really strong number two center behind Brian Little. That's a really big thing for them. Because in today's game, if you don't have good center icemen, you look at all the top teams, you got to have at least three. And then that fourth guy, hopefully, is a good penalty killer, solid guy you can throw at once in a while. But so a lot depends right there. And then, you know, the scoring wingers, you look for those combinations all the time. I think wingers, for me, with all due respect for them, are sort of the last piece of the puzzle. In most instances, you have to have great defense. You have to have mobile defense. And I think the Jets have a terrific crew back there. So if you have that, you have center icemen, you get solid goaltending, then the wingers, I think you can match those a little more easily than some of the other positions as the season goes along.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by new Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst Brian Engblom. We're going to shift the conversation out to the Lightning after talking about the Winnipeg Jets.
And we're talking, Brian, about pending UFAs after this season in Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien. But in reality, the big one in the National Hockey League is Steven Stamkos. He arguably the best forward, best player in the National Hockey League. How do you see that all playing out?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. It's number one priority. Steve Yzerman has said that. And again, it's a difficult contract to do. Mm-hmm. Even another notch up from Ladd and Byfuglien because of the reasons you just said. He is regarded as one of the top players in the game, period. And his numbers, his goal scoring, deserve the top notch payment. So I think you're looking at Kane Taves kind of money in term. It'll be maxed out in term. I've never heard anything other than that he absolutely loves it in Tampa. So I don't see him going anywhere else. This is going to be, you know, a difficult negotiation, and I'm sure it's been going on for quite some time. And he's going to max out right at the top of the league, whatever the top guys are getting. So, you know, whatever that's going to be, $9 million a year, $10 million a year, I don't know. They'll max them up, but I assume it's going to be in the 80 millions range by the time it's all done. That would be my guess, at least.
Brian, you know, as many people know, you were a defenseman for the Stanley Cup winning Montreal Canadiens in the late 1970s, early 1980s. You were a very good defenseman. You played with some pretty good defenseman guys people may have heard of, Larry Robinson, Guy Lapointe. I don't know if people have heard of these guys. But when you look at Victor Hedman, who you're now going to see even more than you've seen in previous years, how have you seen him develop from a top prospect that was drafted second overall, and he's really turned into a player that people were talking about in the last couple of years as being a Norris Trophy candidate?
Well, I think he definitely is a Norris Trophy candidate. It's been terrific to watch him. I started really watching him more closely at the beginning of two seasons ago. He has the size, obviously. He can't teach size. He's huge. But the thing about him is, his skating has gotten even better. He came in as a very good skater, but you can tell that he worked on it. I mean, he is really fast. He's got those gigantic strides. He can cover the entire ice. He's got the ability to take the puck from behind his own net and take it all the way up the ice because he is fast enough to beat one or two guys along the way. His read of the ice, both offensively and defensively, is terrific. He's got that vision of a top-line center iceman, really. The passes he can make on the rush is just fabulous. But his first job, obviously, is his own end. He deciphers what's coming at him very quickly. He understands, and now that he has more experience, because as the years go along, you have to get beaten a few times by the star players to get a feel for them. Then you have that mental book on them, and so you know, okay, what are my capabilities measured against his capability. Maybe it's Ovechkin. Let's talk about Ovechkin for an example. You have to feel that. You're going to get beaten a few times because he's got a lot of tricks in his bag, and he is who he is. So Hedman has to deal with that stuff like any defenseman in the NHL. So he's getting that experience, having been in the league for a couple of years now. Now his confidence level is the biggest factor that catapulted him forward. From halfway through this past season on through the playoffs, you could see he was feeling it. He knows he's one of the top players now. He knows what he can do. He knows that he can play against anybody, any